placing their heads on his feet, sobbing and crying, somehow to pacify him. And even though they tried their best, even though their emotions were not so compelling like the gopis in Vrindavan, but somehow they managed to distract Krishna to some more immediate topics, Dwarka-related topics. So Krishna started coming back out of that Vrindavan trance that he was heading back into. Uddhava quickly ducked away to get Devaki to see if lunch was ready, because that was quite a good way to get Krishna to come back to his sort of normal Dwarka consciousness. Fortunately, Devaki, she already understood this, so she had got lunch ready. So then Uddhava told Lord Krishna that Narada is here. He has come to see you. Krishna was very surprised. Why didn't you bring him in already? You know that whenever he comes, I want to see him immediately. Uddhava explained he's feeling embarrassed because he feels that he has been the cause of all this disturbance. He's feeling too bad, so he's just staying outside. But Krishna said, no, call him, call him. So Narada came in, and Krishna told Narada, you have done me a great favor by starting this discussion. You have done me a great favor. Thank you. And he starts explaining that what you have seen, explaining to Narada actually, although the queens are there too, and he's explaining to them while explaining to Narada, what is Vipralamba Bhava, Viraha Bhava, the ecstasy of separation of the gopis, giving some idea just so they can enter it, at least with their minds they can understand it a little bit. Because Narada, as we said, he was feeling bad. Like, I did something wrong. I shouldn't have talked about the inhabitants of Vrindavan. It was a mistake. But Krishna feels, no, it was not a mistake. Actually, it was very good. So then Krishna explains. So I'll just now read. Krishna's explanation of what the ecstasy of separation really is. It is true that when one is parted from those one loves, pure love makes one suffer within, as if from a blazing forest fire. The burning pain creates a remorse that further deepens into irrepressible sorrow. So in this way, the person's emotions go from the happiness of being with Krishna to another state of sorrow. Thus, one at first, as soon as one enters into that state of feeling separation, one enters into a state that seems wretched. But this anguish of separation is praised as greater than the happiness of enjoying with those one loves. Separation is so pleasing to the mind that it cannot be described. It always transforms at last into an abundance of pleasure. Only experts in tasting these moods can understand how this happens. After the pain of despair is relieved, one's heart feels fully satisfied, delighting constantly as one enjoys the great pleasure of meeting with one's beloved. One may want to feel that separation again, and may indeed feel distressed if one cannot. Thus, a person who can remind one of a beloved who is not present is considered the most sincere and helpful friend. Please understand, when somehow made mindful of those one loves, one is given back one's life. Forgetting those more dear than one's own breath is more painful than dying. Those dearest life one can never forget, but when reminded of them in a special way, one feels happy, like one who has lived a life of good fortune. So there's some interesting purports to these verses, in which it is said that it may appear that there is a certain sort of psychological trick going on here, in that a person, if you convince a person that this material world is constantly fluctuating, so when you are feeling pain, don't worry, because shortly, inevitably, you'll be feeling pleasure again. So therefore, the person who's feeling pain may feel relieved a little. Oh, good. Pleasure will be coming. So the pain may be relieved a bit. So people may think that it is like that, the ecstasy of separation. But it is not exactly like that. In fact, it is very difficult to understand. So he says, Krishna says, only experts in tasting these moods can understand how this happens. But the point is that in that state of him to their chests, and he is so close, but when he's separated from them, then they remember him, and then of course when they remember him, he is there within that remembrance, so he is there within them at that time, so he's even closer to them than when they're embracing him. So therefore, there's an even stronger feeling of connection when there is separation. So anyway, this is the description that Krishna gives of how the ecstasy of separation is actually the highest ecstasy. And the gopis, when they experience that, then that is the, that experience is Krishna's greatest mercy upon them. The fact that Krishna gives them the ecstasy of separation is his greatest mercy upon them. So therefore they are the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy. In many other ways also, but that is the topmost manifestation of the topmost mercy which Krishna gives to the gopis. So Krishna is so happy. He thanks Narada Muni profusely and says, I'm so happy, I want to give you a benediction. So you please ask for something from me. Narada is very happy to get a benediction from Krishna, or the opportunity to ask for one. So Narada says, now this is a very interesting benediction that he asks for, and it makes Krishna laugh, and Krishna will not accept it actually. Narada asks, please grant that no one will ever feel he has enough of your mercy, your devotional service, or pure love for you. So Krishna laughed and said, that is already obvious. That is already obvious. So ask for another benediction. In other words, it's already happening. It's already like that. That the great devotees, they feel like that. So many of them have already said that. So it's already obvious, it's already there. So it's no benediction. You ask for a better benediction. Ask for something, really, something a little different. So then Krishna explains, interesting point actually, before Narada finally asks for two benedictions, special benedictions, Krishna explains that all those devotees who you have met, they're all perfect, all of them. They're already perfect. Any one of them, beginning with the Brahman at Prayag, all of them are capable of delivering the whole world. Any one of them. They have all truly received my mercy. But it is only that there are different degrees, that's all. Yes, they're just different degrees. And as a result, none of them feel satiated. Because they, within themselves, are obviously like examples of the fact that there's no need for Narada Muni to ask that benediction. So you should ask for another more satisfying benediction. So then Narada asks for two benedictions. He says, O swan gliding in the lakes of the Brijbasi's love, I wish that I may wander everywhere, always chanting and drinking the nectar of your names. Those most sweet names arise from the ocean of Gokula and spread the glories of your infinitely varied dress and ways of acting. As I wander, behaving like a madman, may I distribute this joy to everyone in all the worlds. That is the first benediction. And second benediction. Whether by speaking, thinking, hearing, or physical contact, if any person in this world comes in touch even once with these pastimes of yours, and is convinced of their importance, may he be endowed eternally with the power to worship your feet in pure love. Feet resplendent with the saffron dust from the breasts of the blessed gopis. So Lord Krishna became very happy and said, so be it. He granted those benedictions requested by Narada. So then Narada happily took lunch with Krishna and Balaram. Uddhava was there managing the meal, suggesting what was good. This is a nice preparation. Why don't you try some of that? Satyabhama was serving. The other queens were fanning and doing various services, pleasing Narada in many ways. At the end, Krishna garlanded him, anointed him with fragrant oils, and Narada set off back to Prayag
to take the good news to all those sages there at Dashashvamedha Ghat in Prayag. So he went back. The sages were very happy. They accepted everything he said. They took up the worship of Madan Gopal, and they all made advancement on that path themselves. So a very happy ending. So Maharaj Parikshit concludes by telling his mother, "Dear mother, you as well should always worship this young cowherd boy. He is the ocean that yields the nectar of the rasa dance, in which the divine gopis fully surround him, entranced by pure love. You should nourish the desire to be a servant of these gopis. You should constantly worship him in pure love as they did. And you should dedicate yourself to the Sankirtan of his names." The gopis were consumed by the expansive flames of the wondrous blazing fire of love for Krishna. "If my guru," this is Shukadeva of course, "if my guru chants the names of these gopis and recalls a gopi's distinguishing qualities, he too is touched by sparks shooting forth from the flames of this intense fire, and he at once becomes greatly agitated. Therefore he has to avoid pronouncing the gopi's names." We find that in the Bhagavatam. Shukadev did not mention the names of any of the gopis. "If you follow my advice and with pure love take shelter of the gopis and their master, Lord Sri Krishna, then, O mother, I promise that by Krishna's mercy you'll be able to understand something of the gopis' greatness. With the help of this most excellent narration about the Supreme Lord, which shows who has received the essence of the Lord's mercy, one can understand him for certain. Anyone who for any reason takes shelter with faith of this narration will quickly attain love for Lord Sri Krishna." Hare Krishna. So that is the end of the first part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Quite amazing. Quite amazing, actually. Yes, the gopis, they're the greatest recipients of the Lord's mercy in all respects, but particularly when they're in the ecstasy of separation, then they're the greatest recipients of the greatest. That is when they get the greatest of the mercy that they get, all of which is always the greatest, but that is the greatest part of it. So, we are fortunate that by the mercy of Srila Sanatana Goswami, we also got a chance to understand a little bit about that. Tomorrow we'll start the story of Gopa Kumar, the second part. For the time being, though, does anyone have any comments or questions? Can you? In the light of the description of separation that we've read, can we explain the verse which Krishna speaks, Vrindavanam Paricharya Ekapadam Nagachati? I never take a step out of Vrindavan. Krishna there is referring to his aprakat form. he never takes a step out of Vrindavan, this Vrindavan, in that form. So the thing is that all the inhabitants of Vrindavan actually, and but it's most particularly seen in the gopis, but all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, when Krishna leaves, they all attain states of extreme separation, and in their own ways, although certainly more than anyone else, the gopis, in their own ways, they all experience that separation. So, Krishna, see, one point which we haven't, which is there in the purports, is that there is an understanding that Krishna does go back to Vrindavan sometimes, or, well, actually two things. Sometimes he does go back, and other times he reveals himself. Because when he sees the devotees there in so much separation, so sometimes he goes back, and sometimes he reveals himself. Now, when he was explaining to the queens why he doesn't go back, he didn't want to tell them that sometimes he goes back, or that he's intending going back, or that sometimes he manifests himself there, because he was afraid of another problem, which has been referred to already. Yesterday we referred to it, how Devaki, when it seemed, sort of midway through the discussion yesterday, when it seemed that Krishna might be about to decide to go back to Vrindavan, Devaki quickly said, yes, you should give them what they want. With the idea subtly being that maybe we can avoid your going back to Vrindavan, but do something else to satisfy them. So she was afraid, and the queens were afraid, that they might lose Krishna. So Krishna didn't want to mention directly that sometimes he goes, that he was going to go again later permanently, and sometimes he manifests there, because he thought that might bewilder them, and they might become distraught and overwhelmed, and that would be another problem. So, but anyway, the fact is that sometimes Krishna goes there. There are different verses in the Bhagavatam. There are some verses, I think it's spoken by Kunti, isn't it? Actually, I forget who spoke that verse, but sometimes you're in Hastinapur, sometimes you're in Mathura, sometimes you're in Vrindavan. So Krishna would sometimes go there. Or sometimes he would reveal himself, although normally he's in that apricot state, sometimes he would reveal himself to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Anyway, the thing is, in regard to his description of separation, the thing is that when the inhabitants of Vrindavan were thinking that Krishna had left, then even, he referred to it a little bit himself, that they were feeling separation so much, they would sometimes see a shadow which resembled him. They'd try to embrace it, thinking that it was him. In other words, they would think they would see him. But then sometimes when he would appear to them actually, then the inhabitants of Vrindavan would think that, no, he's not here, so we're not seeing him. This is just an hallucination, just like the time when one gopi might think, just like the time when I embraced that tamal tree, thinking it was Krishna. But after a little while, I realized, no, this is hard. This is not Krishna. Then she saw, oh, it's a tree. So I was just hallucinating. So sometimes when Krishna would appear to them, they would think like that. That no, we're just hallucinating. You're not really there. So Krishna, he was always there anyway in that uppercut form. But whatever he did didn't seem to really help as far as their feelings of separation were concerned, because they remained convinced that he had gone, that he was not there. So like this, it may be, it is, ekapadam nagachati, that Krishna never takes a step outside of Vrindavan. That's particularly in his uppercut form. And, you know, but he remains there. And it's all part of enhancing this experience of the feelings of separation. And sometimes there being meetings like that, something like that. Any other question or comment? Dadu. It's an interesting question. It's not only Krishna who says he doesn't take a step out of Vrindavan, but some of the bridge busses, yeah? Some of the bridge busses say that also. But still, we say that the bridge busses feel that he has left Vrindavan, so how could it be? Well, you know, Jiva Goswami addresses that contradiction. Yeah. He addresses that by saying that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they are confident or they trust Krishna. They trust Uddhava. Yes, they have this trust. Of course, sometimes they're feeling he's gone from Vrindavan. But still at other times they trust that he says he'll never leave. If he leaves, it'll only be momentarily and then he'll be back, so it's like he has never left. And if we say that Krishna has really left, then it means we're calling Uddhava a liar, because Uddhava said he'll be back in no time. In other words, that he's not really left. So, when they get into that type of ecstasy, then they may feel convinced that Krishna will never leave Vrindavan. He would never leave Vrindavan. How could he leave Vrindavan? Well, this is very high sort of... Can you repeat that? Yes? Yes? Dadu is suggesting that the cowherd boys never felt any separation. To my understanding, that is not entirely accurate. They also felt separation. Everyone felt separation from Krishna. Yes, everyone. Everyone felt separation. But they have their different moods. They have different moods at different times. Yes. So therefore, sometimes they may feel confident that Krishna is here, or perhaps he's gone, but he'll be back in no time, so it's like he's never gone, so effectively he's never gone. They may feel like that. Different transcendental moods. Other ways he was there sometimes, or even he would just appear sometimes. So therefore you get these other moods coming in. Sometimes a conviction that he is there. He would never go. He could never go. How could he ever go? It's not possible. And that's true. It's not possible that Krishna could go. So that mood is there There's a place for that. But the fundamental underlying theme is that he's gone. Yes, he's actually gone. And that was dominating the scene. Although other moods would come in sometimes. Yeah. And they would express themselves in other ways sometimes. But on the basis of the Bhagavatam, we would accept that